Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Friday, the 30th of November. A delight to have you all with us on this Friday. And yes, a delight for it to be Friday.
Woo-hoo. Indeed.
Yay. We have a lot to talk about, a lot to discuss, and we'll do the best we can in the time we have allotted. We have a great group to do it. Let me introduce them, and then I'll remind you how you can be a part of the program, and then we'll get to it. Add, mix, stir, enjoy.
Cool.
David Soares is here as the Albany County District Attorney and our dear friend. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I was wondering if that song that led us in was the song that Fonzie did the dance off at Arnold.
No, that's actually the Klezmatics playing Woody Guthrie's Happy Joyous Hanukkah. They're going to be doing this at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall to celebrate Hanukkah on Saturday night at 7:30. TroyMusicHall.org. Thank you for asking.
Do you think it'll be in one of the great newspapers of all times, the Troy Record?
The Troy Record.
Yeah, because you know, as you know, that my column appears there.
I know that.
Yeah, I do.
I was reading your column last week in the Troy Record.
You are?
I was. I found out that one of my students, former students, is now the city editor of the Troy Record.
Oh.
I was very excited about that. So,
what's her
I'm
name?
I'm sensing some collusion here.
The answer to your question, no collusion. There's never been any collusion. Everything I did was, quote, very legal. The answer to your question is Nick Buonanno.
Oh, yeah, he's terrific.
Yes.
And so, I have another question. Why is David Soares all dressed up today?
Oh, somebody must be going to court.
Oh, yeah, there's some issues today.
By the way, how you compartmentalize that? Because, like, you leave here, you're in a good mood, everything's fine, and then we just read about you for the rest of the day.
Yes.
And I think, well, that's unfortunate. He certainly put on a good poker face when he was here.
Well, at least my Cowboys won last night, so that's starting my morning.
Yeah, that was quite a game against the Saints last night. I was monitoring that. For God's sakes, Aaron Pasitti is with us. He's been gone for a while. He's been traveling the globe. We're thrilled to have him back on this continent. Hello.
Bonjour. Yeah. Bon matin.
Yeah.
I was in France for a week as part of a faculty exchange with a sister university that Siena has in France, teaching U.S. economic policy to international students in English, and their jaws just stayed open the entire time when I was trying to explain to them what was happening.
You professors, you get away with murder, traveling to France and having a good time.
And I was in Lyon, and the cuisine there is fantastic, and I will eat anything, but I met my match with what's called andouchette, which is a tripe casserole.
Oh, God.
And right. I took one bite of that. And my wife was sitting across from me, and she started to chuckle because she could see the look on my face of he met his match.
Yeah, that's when the salivary glands just start to work prior to you putting the food in your mouth.
Yeah.
Now, how do they spell andouchette?
It's
that's cool.
Aren't you a troublemaker?
Yeah, it's not the way you think.
Every ethnic group has it, right? I mean,
sure.
The Jewish people have stuffed kishka. Yeah. I think that's the same.
And I've had tripe before, and it was fantastic, but maybe it was just the restaurant. But it
really? I don't know. My mother told the story. My grandfather died before I was born, but my father's side. But he apparently, in one of my mother's first meetings with her future in-laws, he made her eat tripe, and she never really forgave him for that. Mm. Loved him dearly, great, but wasn't happy about the tripe part.
It's not for everyone.
No.
And what do the orange eat? You know, I went to the Fort Orange Club, and there once they're celebrating Orange Day, you know. Cause,
I thought you were talking about the president. Go ahead.
No. And they have a specialty. What is that called? 14,000 people will now write in.
I don't remember.
Tell us what it is.
My only time at the Fort Orange Club was protesting outside on the
sidewalk.
Well,
you should have. And I used to protest.
When they would not allow women as members.
Yeah.
Remember
that?
That
was terrible.
Yeah. So, I don't know what's on the menu.
So, Judith Eng is here.
Happy intro.
Last time I was there, I was boycotting them. Good morning. Welcome. How are you?
Great. Good morning.
It's wonderful to have you back as well. And Alan Chartok here. Good morning, sir. Nice to have you. Yeah, be happy. It's Friday. Be happy.
I think his column is in the Troy Record, isn't it?
Yeah.
And his picture is above the fold.
It's also most of the
thrilled.
Troy Record.
Now.
No, it's great.
All right. Let's get to what's going on. And, you know, it's a busy news day. I was out of online range last night, so I sent stories earlier in the day than I normally would, and I thought, well, everything's going to be shot to hell. But the stories were so big, they actually lasted, and boy, I was surprised. So we talked about this a little bit yesterday as this news was dribbling in about Michael Cohen and striking a pleading guilty to lying to Congress, and this looks to be a very important sign in the Mueller investigation of what's being done. There's a couple things to talk about here, I think, and I'm waiting for my computer to load up, so in the meantime, I'm just going to try to I'll look at Aaron's phone is what I'll do. But there's a couple things here. One is the fact that this, what was done here, apparently crosses the red line that the president set of looking into his business dealings. Mm-hmm. But what we have found out is that red line included, let's remember that Mueller was tasked of looking at mm-hmm. collusion and the relationship between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. So Michael Cohen pleaded guilty Thursday to lying to Congress about a Moscow real estate project that Trump and his company pursued at the same time he was securing the GOP nomination in 2016. Just real quick, January was the date that most people said was the last time this was discussed at all.
Well, Trump said that.
But I was going to go one step further and say, but Trump said there were no discussions. He never had any in January of 2016. He also said we never had any relationships with Russia. I guess 2017. We never had any relationships with Russia. That was never a thing. Then it was January. Now we find out in these filings that it was June, at least June. And by that time, he was the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party. At a 9-page filing, prosecutors laid out a litany of lies that Cohen admitted he told lawmakers in Congress about the Moscow project, an attempt, he said, to minimize links between the proposed development and Trump as his presidential bid was gaining steam. Cohen made a surprise appearance Thursday morning before U.S. District Judge Andrew Carter Jr., who asked him to enter his plea. "Guilty, Your Honor," he replied. As part of the plea, Cohen said he lied for the person listed in court documents as individual number one. Check your coding at home. That's the President of the United States.
New Twitter account. Individual number one,
better than client number nine. So,
well,
maybe.
Come on now. Now, Mr. District Attorney, I have a question for you, sir.
Yes, sir.
How do you hold Trump responsible for lying to the American people? In other words, you can hold him responsible if he went before Congress and lied, but you know, Cohen went before Congress and lied, but can you hold this president? Where is the president going to get got on this is the question.
Well, if you're asking who is responsible for holding the president accountable for lying, you know, the answer to that would be every single American who looks at themselves in the mirror and has the opportunity to exercise the most precious and valuable franchise that we have in the United States.
Yeah, That's route number one.
Route number two is, you know, we have a system of checks and balances in this country that permits the Congress to hold this president accountable for mistruths and telling mistruths to the American people. Option number three is you have a person who's called a special prosecutor who is doing his absolute best right now to not necessarily to investigate to a conclusion, but to investigate and continue to enforce and prosecute the crimes that he comes across.
But I still don't get it. In other words, I just recently heard from somebody, I'm not allowed to use their name, but they're high up in the government. They said this guy continues and will continue to get away with whatever he does.
Well,
and all those things are yeah stuff.
You can lie, and if you lie under oath, that's a crime.
With that we know.
Okay. But when you stand at a podium and you lie, or you go to a rally and you lie, the only people that can hold you accountable for lying, you know, in that context are the American people or Congress. And we're not seeing the Congress do what they're supposed to do.
But let's skip to route number three. How does route number three get individual number one?
Route number three is working, and I will tell you that route number three is working and is closer to individual number one now than he's ever been before.
Okay, I'm
and
still good. Right Remind now, me what route number three is.
Right again. Now, route number three special is the special prosecutor Mueller. And providing that upon Mr. Trump's return, because I think next week is going to be the most pivotal week.
Maybe he'll stay in Argentina.
next week is the most pivotal week in this investigation, in the sense that he could come back from Argentina on Monday and begin taking steps to interfere by the use of Mr. Whitaker or by having his friends in Congress, you know, begin to do his bidding. So next week is the week to watch.
Or pardon.
Or pardon.
Yeah, but okay, David, but here's a group. I know, Judith, you had something to say.
I have
one
response to your question.
Okay, yeah, but here's the problem that I'm thinking of, just for whatever it's worth. Now we hear that Putin was being offered $50 million penthouse in a Trump Tower. There has to be some kind of rules about bribing.
I thought you meant rent control. Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's good though. I like it.
But I don't in defense of Putin and Trump. I never thought
really?
I'd say that.
Really?
I don't think they actually offered it to Putin. They talked about it as a marketing scheme.
Oh, I see.
And it was between Michael Cohen and Felix Sater, and they said if we had Putin in the $50 million penthouse, other oligarchs would be more likely to rent there.
In a conspiracy, you don't actually need for the end result
the
to,
offer be
to be
successful.
Right. Right. And you don't know whether it was made or not, right?
So the alternative reality that we live in now is we know all of the stuff that came out yesterday, and the president said, well, that's not true. Cohen's lying. But even if I did that, it's okay.
Well, by the end of the day, it wasn't even if I did that. That was gone from the messaging.
Right.
By the end of the day is, yes, there were discussions about these proposals, but I backed out of it. I didn't go through it. I didn't do any of it.
So the thing that I find fascinating about this is Cohen, who I think we all regarded as a snake, right? I mean, a bit of a snake.
Mm-hmm.
And his job was to go and do the president's bidding and to
fix it.
To fix things. Mm-hmm. He was the fixer.
He's a weak
man. He was the cleanup guy. So then when he goes to Congress and tells them all of these things that he did, well, he's doing exactly what he had always done, right?
Right.
So it is hard, even though the guy is a liar, it's hard to think that he lied or that what happened there and what he said wasn't true, meaning that I know there's mistruths in what he said and that's why he got, but that narrative makes sense because that's what he did, right? That was his job.
The narrative makes sense, but take a couple of steps back as to what transpired this week in the United States of America, right? Prosecutors are prohibited from taking the stage and telling the American people anything. We can't talk about our cases.
Right.
So we're always at a deficit because the opposition can take to the microphones every single day. They can write letters to the editor. They can do whatever they want.
Right.
It happens in every space.
And only you can go on the radio.
That's true. So let's look at what happened this week. What happened this week was a person who agreed to cooperate with the special prosecutor was discovered to have violated his agreement. So the prosecutor withdrew the plea bargain, right?
Manafort.
And exposed Manafort as a person who was, let's say the word, colluding, right, with the president in disclosing to the president the inner workings of the prosecution to the extent that he understood them and knew them, right? So the prosecutor withdrew his plea bargain, followed it up right on the back end with this plea, right, that continues to show that this president continues to collude, and I'll use that word because that's the word that he likes to use so often, in undermining this investigation. And this defendant basically took a plea yesterday admitting to all of these things, including the fact that several months back he went before the House, he testified before the House, and he lied for the benefit of the President of the United States.
Now, the big unknown here, correct me if I'm wrong, is that in his written responses to Mueller's questions, which I don't believe have officially been submitted, right?
No, they have been.
They have been. Yes. Yeah, yeah. They have been submitted.
And that's why I think we're seeing this flurry of activity this week.
Okay. So, but then you have to wonder, well, then did the president lie to the special prosecutor,
yes,
as to...
And that's why I want to circle, yeah, back to Alan's first question. I think that's where, and I'd be interested if you agree with this, David, where the president is probably the most vulnerable, is if his written answers are untrue. And that is a legal
problem. To the best of his knowledge.
Yeah, that was peppered in there.
Aaron? But.
I think the issue to bring up is, you know, Trump was very clear in that, you know, don't look at my finances. But finances are it's the currency in which you get favors from others. So the finances and the collusion go hand in hand. So I think Trump is very aware of this. And so why does he want access to Russian oligarch money is because he's been, I don't want to say blacklisted, but his credit record with a lot of banks is pretty minimal, so he needs to go to outside sources. He's also looking for adulation from another autocrat. And remember in June and July, that was in 2016, Trump was also talking about lifting sanctions on Russia. That's a pretty explicit quid pro quo without directly speaking to Putin and just kind of talking, you know, across the Atlantic about,
yeah,
it doesn't do it for me,
I'll tell you right now, because we all know, and I'm going to go back to the DA on this, you know, it's one thing to...
45 seconds, well, go ahead.
Yeah, if you say it into a microphone on a telephone, yeah, that's very different than if you just sort of...
Yeah, he also said that his tax cut would create jobs.
Well, let's understand something.
Stop.
We should not be operating under the illusion that the special prosecutor is determining everything that he does based upon what is being said to him. Before they even engage in speaking to witnesses, they have reviewed thousands upon thousands of documents, and they're looking at all other corroborating evidence. And that's before they even allow themselves to step into a room to have a conversation with a person.
Let's pause there. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We are talking to David Soares, Aaron Pasitti, Judith Enck, and Alan Chartok. We will be right back and welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. David Soares is here, Aaron Pasitti, Judith Enck, and Alan Chartok. Mm-hmm. And we will we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org.
And by the way, it was Haggis before that I was referring
and
to.
I was wrong. It was Andouillet, not Andouillet. So I apologize.
Yes, I wanted to say it was Haggis, and I also wanted
to
say I love the Troy Record. I think it's a great paper.
Okay. Alan, we should have discussed this during the break, but I forgot. We have two choices. I can read letters to you, or you can read them off your device.
Oh, we don't have a printer?
No.
Something went wrong?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I think you're trying to use less paper whenever Judith is in the studio. Yeah.
That's true. We want to look good in front
Saving
of Judith. That's right.
Yeah, I'm noticing no plastic straws.
So let me start. I'll start with this one, and then you can catch up there, Alan.
Right.
What about Trump praising Putin to Americans, denying Putin's horrendous abuses while trying to profit from business deals in Russia? And we should mention that, and also the fact that the meeting that was scheduled for the G20 between the president and Vladimir Putin was canceled yesterday, which is another item up for bids to talk about.
Make no mistake about it. It was canceled because of Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller. It was not canceled because of the moral indignation over the incident between Russia and Ukraine.
And in fact, it should have been the opposite. I think he should have kept the meeting to confront Putin about Ukraine and interfering in the election. I think also there will likely be a pull aside without any record of the conversation.
I mean, this is very, you know, the timing of this is very convenient cover for Trump to start distancing himself from Putin now that the hatchet's coming down.
Well. Also, Aaron, don't you think there's a potential at least for some little blackmail here that Putin has it on him, and you know, one false move and you're done.
Which is what Sally Yates, remember her,
yeah,
was warning about. When you have Flynn and others in a compromised position,
you're
vulnerable.
And Hillary said that during the campaign. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're Sally Yates and you're waking up in the morning and you're seeing that Mr. Cohen has taken a plea and he's made admissions in his allocution the way that his allocution had read, she had gone to the White House because she wanted to warn the administration about Michael Flynn. That's mm-hmm. what she was mm-hmm. not recognizing, that there was a bigger monster in the room than Michael Flynn.
So you're saying, should Sally Yates feel better this morning now that this is happening?
Well, Sally Yates, absolutely. But she should also shrug it off and say, oh, I was going there to report on Michael Flynn, but I was actually going, I was reporting to Donald Trump, who was involved in much bigger dealings and was going to be much more vulnerable to the Russian intelligence agencies than Michael Flynn.
So if you were Hillary Clinton this morning.
I'm going to go back to a point that Judith raised about it probably would have been a wiser idea to keep the meeting between Trump and Putin, because what Putin's always wanted was the lifting of sanctions, which Trump was making overtures to during the campaign. But he's also looking for very limited interference from other military superpowers in his quest to start reclaiming some of the former Soviet states. And here he goes. And Trump's not stepping in to say, you know, maybe we should talk about this.
Yeah, well, he doesn't have the moral leadership that a president of the United States typically would have.
Or blackmail.
Everything's about his personal financial situation as opposed to standing up for human rights and continuing the American tradition of addressing that when you're in a setting like this.
Yeah, and keeping a volatile region, less volatile
stable.
And trying to keep it as stable
that's
as possible.
Even, that's not even on his radar.
No, of course it's not.
You don't have the United States. We didn't lose moral authority. We gave it away. And so how can a man who is in a foreign country right now with Mr. Putin on his left and Mr. The Saudi Arabian prince.
MLB?
MBS.
On his right, in the shadow of the Khashoggi murder, what is he going to say?
Right.
How could he possibly say anything to Vladimir Putin?
Theresa May has said she is going to confront Saudi Arabia on the murder.
But her plane didn't do well.
No, that was Miss Merkel.
Oh, Merkel's plane didn't do well.
Merkel's plane.
Sorry about that.
Theresa May, I think, is feeling a lot of political pressure and
needs to speak
out on important, really basic stuff. Saudi Arabia, don't be killing journalists.
Yeah. Which you wouldn't think you'd be pleading for your leadership to be saying.
Hey,
and yet,
listen, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. We don't know.
Good people on both sides. Okay, go ahead, Alan.
Okay. Alan, remember back in Watergate? Only I am being said remember back in Watergate because I'm the oldest of all of yous.
We were alive.
Remember back in Watergate, the tape that had Nixon talking about all the things that they could do. But at the end, he said, quote, but that would be wrong. He knew the microphone was on. Okay, but that would be wrong. And then he said, we were just discussing things that we didn't do. Otis and Beckett.
You know, people continue to speak about, and I myself have said this often, but everyone's relying on Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller to make the decision, right? To bring some finality to this, and I would argue that he will only help because the person who is going to do it is Donald Trump himself. This man came into this administration with people who were able to, were able to keep him under control to some degree. And what we've seen in the course of 2 years is the immediate, he continues to shed himself of guardrails and people who know better than him that would protect him. Right. And he finds himself in this situation, not because of anybody else, but because of himself. And so I look to this coming week. And then the month of December is going to be a huge month, right? Mm-hmm. Because let's take everything into consideration.
It's a month of giving, you know.
It is the month of giving, and I think the new leadership in the House will be giving him a lot in his stockings. And so he's got that to worry about, right? And if he doesn't take some kind of action before they're sworn in, which gives him a month, right? Mm-hmm. If he doesn't take some kind of action, what is he going to be looking at in 2019? Forget policy, because he doesn't care about policy.
Right.
We're talking about his own self-interest. And so the month of December is a huge month for the United States of America and where our democracy will rest.
I better get my holiday shopping done early.
I know. With all that going on.
Don't buy anything that has steel in it, because it's going to be a lot more expensive now than it was in the past.
And, of course, no plastic.
Go ahead, Alan.
And okay. Tripe is just off the...
And we heard from Ken, who said, Law and Order, as a lifelong watcher of Law and Order with a son in Seton Hall Law School, I know a lawyer never asks a question they don't already know the answer to. Love the panel. Listen every day. And that's Beth from Ken.
Awesome, Ken.
Awesome. Okay. All right.
By the way, I for whatever reason, when that exchange just went on, I just put in the term in my Google search, tripe by mail. You can get it. If you want to order it for a loved one this holiday season, you can order it.
Maybe given how David's predicting 2019 will go, tripe should be the official food of the United States in 2019.
Tripe, Trump.
The metaphor is amazing.
Yeah, right. There's some people who say you can get it right here.
All right. A letter or two, Alan, and then we're going to go to a break.
All right. Okay. For David, I heard one of the legal eagles on the morning shows indicate that when Paul Manafort struck a plea deal with Robert Mueller, the joint agreement between Manafort and Trump's lawyers is usually terminated. Mm-hmm. The lawyer went on to say something about when that agreement is terminated, lawyer-client confidentiality is terminated. He said that Mueller could bring Manafort's lawyers before a grand jury and compel them to tell what was shared with Trump's lawyers. Is that your understanding? Are you with us?
I don't know that I agree with that. In fact, I don't even know that as a special prosecutor he'd want to get into any of that.
Sure, why?
Because you're now going to be engaged in collateral litigation over whether or not – over the issue of attorney-client privilege. And who wants that kind of distraction when you are on a course to score, you know, much larger points from the other sources of your investigation? It is so unusual. It is so absurd for a defendant who is arrived at an agreement with a prosecutor to continue – to have any kind of contact with co-defendants, it just never happens. So this idea and what we're seeing play out on the national stage further bolsters the position that this president, you know, is conspiring, or the words that he likes, is engaged in collusion, not only in collusion with Russia as it relates to the campaign of 2016, but also in the effort to obstruct the special prosecutor's investigation.
You know, it's bad when Rudy Giuliani pops back on the scene.
The mask.
And he came up again. We hadn't seen him for a few weeks. And he popped up this week saying, well, we had this joint, not a joint prosecution agreement, but disclosure.
Disclosure agreement amongst defense.
How can even the president think that he's helping matters, by the way?
Because
they speak the same language. Yeah. I think
says nice things about him. That's all. Yeah,
he needs a defense. He needs a defense. Any defense. Any public
defense.
Most
lawyers wouldn't do it.
Well, that is the precise reason so many of the very legitimate, you know, high end, firms in D.C. and New York City stayed away from this guy.
Right.
Okay, and then we heard from William, who said, like most of the media speculation on this president, one of the panel's claims to know with certainty the reason for Trump's canceling the Putin meeting. Care to share your proof?
It's not proof. It's just the hypothesis.
Speculation. Yeah, and that's right. What he said. I mean, that's... So, yeah, please, give me a break.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we have some climate talk and... happy?
Yay.
Yes, excellent. We'll be back. Hide the straws, David. We'll be right back.
Get out the rakes.
We'll be right back. Just a reminder, the music you hear is from the Cosmatics. They're playing Woody Guthrie's Happy Joyous Hanukkah at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall on Saturday at 7:30. You can find out more at troymusichall.org. troymusichall.org.
Tell them you heard it here.
Beautiful place.
Tell them we said
amazing.
Hi. Yeah, oh, it is gorgeous. The Cosmatics are dear friends, and of course, all good. All right, let's talk about the climate report. There has been a lot in the news over the last week in regards. A week ago, the president or the administration, right? The White House.
The administration.
Yeah,
13 agencies.
They sent out a scientific report, and then they did their best to bury it. They have defined itself by a willingness to dismiss scientific findings and propose its own facts. On Friday, issued a scientific report that directly contradicts its own climate change policies. That sets the stage for a remarkable split-screen political reality in coming years. The administration is widely expected to discount or ignore the report's detailed findings of the economic strain caused by climate change, even as it continues to cut environmental regulations while opponents use it to mount legal attacks against the very administration that issued the report. So it's like if you, I don't know, hired a Fed chair and then said the Fed chair is lousy. It's like that. So on top of that, the president goes and talks to the Washington Post. He says, people like myself, we have very high levels of intelligence, but we're not necessarily such believers.
As if it's theological and not science.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the most important thing about the story is to just ignore what the president says about climate change. It's not helpful. It's not well-informed. It's just kind of a sideshow. But this study was mandated by Congress. It's 13 federal agencies come together with their best scientists, and they look at the science in an unbiased way. The White House could not block the study because Congress required them to put it out. And it's a very grim and very detailed look at what's coming at us, including, I think they were smart, they looked at the economic impacts of climate change. They said that the damage could knock off 10% of the size of the American economy by the end of this century.
Can I chime in and just explain how that's going to happen?
Please.
Because a lot of people don't see these connections. So when you have rising temperatures, it's going to affect agricultural yields worldwide, which means people who have lots of money and capital invested in, say, growing wheat, and all of a sudden they can't grow wheat because there's either drought or heavy rains. That's going to push up the price of food, and everybody needs to eat. So that's going to have a huge effect on agricultural jobs. The second has to do with international supply chains and trade relations, which are already being jeopardized with the tariffs. But you know, the flood in Thailand wiped out a lot of Western Digital's hard drive
computers,
production.
Yep.
You're going to have so that creates a loss of jobs in the U.S. So imagine if, you know, the Foxconn plant floods because of an earthquake or tidal wave that hits the shore of China, then all of a sudden the cost of prohibitively expensive iPhones is going to become even more prohibitive. So you're just going to start to see more expensive products, which is going to reduce economic activity. It's going to reduce jobs. And we are looking at a long time period up until 2100, they said, by century's end.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a very slow and painful boil of higher prices for most of the goods consumers buy.
Yeah. So agriculture and trade is affected. This report documented $151 billion in damage from heat-related deaths alone. So put aside the human suffering and the tragedy, economic damage from heat-related deaths, economic damage from sea level rise. And remember, this comes right after the UN report that came out a few weeks ago, saying that unless we really reduce carbon emissions, we'll be facing catastrophic climate change by 2040. So do the math. You know, we're going to be around, hopefully, and our kids and grandchildren will be by 2040. And of course, the effects are already here. So unfortunately, as Joe mentioned, the split screen, you've got this really solid data next to the Trump anti-environmental, you know, rolling back EPA's Clean Power Plan, pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord, attacking fuel efficiency standards. I mean, it is truly, truly disturbing.
Well, I can tell you that one of the things I truly enjoy about being at the roundtable is the fact that I can come and sit down and listen to the both of you and learn something from the both of you in the moments that we share.
Especially Aaron.
Well, this is an important conversation because I think this show does a tremendous service to engage people and have this conversation, because what I see is a disservice from our mainstream
right.
media
yes.
because you're going to have someone like yourself, an expert in this area, talk about important issues that people should know about, and they're going to put a clown right next to you.
Right.
That's just going to just make these outlandish statements not supported by any kind of evidence, and that's what passes for dialogue.
Right. That's and what so happened all last week.
Yeah, absolutely. So my question to you is, when do the people, when do the environmentalists, when do the people actually begin to call on these networks, right, to employ some integrity in the transmission of this kind of information? And, you know, I'll boycott CNN the next mm-hmm. time I see Rick Santorum with his vest talking about, you know,
right.
the environment. It's like,
right.
what, Rick Santorum? Really?
Right.
This is the guy who, you know, we're listening to
right.
on these issues?
And Chuck Todd had the Competitive Enterprise Institute woman talking about cold weather. I mean, it was unbelievable. And there are so many effective climate scientists who know how to communicate this message. And they're just like putting them on in the last two days.
And you know what? And the thing is, and I don't want anybody to misinterpret what I'm saying here. Like, we need to have a forum where people who disagree with can also share their opinions that's supported by something. So it gives us all that counter argument to weigh and make your own decision. But what I see happening right now, and it's all the networks that do this.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
like you'll have like an intelligent person, an expert in some field talk, and then they put some clown.
Right.
On
yeah.
the split screen.
Well, I saw to exactly to
so
your
am I the
point.
Clown on this panel right now?
No, sir. No, please.
Yeah.
Come on.
Oh,
wait.
No.
No clowns on the round table. There's a no clown rule.
We'll send in the clowns. But, you know, to your point, I was watching, this was on two different networks, but why are we, we're still debating the flat Earth.
Yeah. yeah.
Right.
And you know, you have three people who say, "Oh, the world isn't, the Earth is not flat." And then you have somebody on and say, "Well, yes, it is." Well, why?
I have a hypothesis about this. Is that in an era where there's increasing political polarization, I think the media is trying to not take sides, to show some type of impartiality. So they try to give both sides equal time, but without actually commenting on it. So it's like, opinions on the shape of the world differ.
But to Judah's point, it's also damaging.
Yeah, it's really, and it's terrible. It's 98% of scientists agree that carbon, man-made climate change. Like
more than dentist and teeth brushing.
Yeah, exactly. there's really no debate. And so I think producers and bookers are just lazy, saying we've got to do both sides. I want to make one more substantive point, if I can. If we had started to significantly reduce carbon emissions in the year 2000, we would have had to cut by 3% per year to avoid catastrophic climate change. We didn't. If we get serious about it today, 10% carbon reductions a year. And in 10 years, if we wait 10 years, 30% reduction per year. The math doesn't add up. The longer we wait, the more we are cooked.
I'd like to throw in so to Judith's point about, you know, and Joe's point about climate scientists being almost unanimous. Yes,
98%.
Unanimous in their analysis here. So an economist would say, okay, this could have an effect on the economy, but economies adapt to all types of changing circumstances. So there's, you know, we could grow food inside in abandoned warehouses in Detroit and have them climate controlled, and that would alleviate some of the pressure. We could figure out new supply chains.
We're growing marijuana there now, though.
Well, yeah, it's okay. So, anyway, that could be an overestimate of the 10%. There might be ways to fix it, but there's going to be a lot of short-term disruptions that are going to affect people in a lot of industries.
There already is.
But you're not hearing that intelligent debate anywhere aside from WAMC.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think someone should ask the governor about the Amazon facility in Long Island City. That's going to be impacted by sea level rise.
I'll be talking to him in just a few minutes.
That would be a good question.
Stirring some trouble. Mm. You know why she doesn't like plastic stirred? But she's stirring right now.
Well, it could be. It could be a. It could be.
I think she's stirring with a sledgehammer. It could be a pickaxe.
What that does to a styrofoam cup.
It's a real issue. Why put giant new facilities right on the water's edge when we know we've got documented sea level rise in downstate New York and violent weather?
You think, what do you think?
Because shareholders want to see profits now?
The land is there. Yeah, they're not thinking the next 10, 20 years.
Mm. All right. I'm told I have to get out by 58:30, so I'm going to try to get out, although I'm not exactly sure why. But we'll do that. So we'll take a break. We'll return.
Maybe.
Exactly. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this short break.